I find a lot of beauty and power and commitment in doing the thing that you wouldn't mind doing all the time. So I would kind of bring a prompt to the reader, like, what is something that you wouldn't mind doing 200 iterations of? Like, look for that thing and go do that.
Hey, friend, it's David Nabinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. So excited for episode 200. Wow. If this is your first episode, incredible. If you've been here for a while, thank you. This is a very special episode with two special friends. As you may know, I started the podcast in the summer of 2018. Two of those roommates are featured on this episode, Kian Gardner and Giovanni Beckford. As you may remember, Kian was actually the first interview on the show, and Giovanni was episode 100, another special episode. So excited to bring and have this conversation with two very close friends. In this episode, you'll learn about career transitions, books. Giovanni has read over 500 books. And whenever people visit us, they always comment on the bookshelf. And so such a treat to talk a little bit about that here. Consistency, storytelling, focuses and ambitions, and three words that are guiding us for 2022, and so much more. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can also subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which has the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced referable job opportunities. Thanks again for being a part of this. And so excited for more episodes to come. Excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Kian and Giovanni.
All right. Episode 200 with Giovanni and Kian. Boys, this is incredible. Thank you so much for being part of this. Started in this as roommates 3.5 years ago. And now here we are. So first, thank you. One place I did want to start was, what were you guys thinking when I first started the show? When I was like, hey guys, I think I'm starting a podcast. And what were you guys thinking about there?
Yeah, I think for me, I wasn't too unfamiliar with you running with random experiments. I remember the kale days, and I saw how long those lasted. I remember the brunch days, saw how long that lasted. I remember the Seth days, saw how long that lasted. So I think in my mind, I see you just taking risks and going through experiments. What I'm definitely surprised with is just the length and longevity of this particular era. And it seems to be like the foundational layer, because there's still been a lot of different changes in your life, but this is kind of like the backbone and the one consistent thing that kind of props up all the other future endeavors. So this is quite the milestone, and I'm super excited that we're kind of, all three of us are kind of circling back to the beginning.
Yeah, I think 200. This is 200. Wow. I don't think when we did episode one that I would be here for 200, to be honest. I mean, I think we've talked a lot, David, and Giovanni alluded to this a little bit. It's you are, when we first met, experimental. We had just moved in. It was maybe, do you remember how many months in, or like at what point you started the podcasting relative to when we had moved in?
So I looked back at it. I emailed you July 2018. And so I think if we moved in the August 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a little less than a year. I'd seen you try a bunch of different things, like Giovanni mentioned. And I started to get a sense that you were one of the most consistent people at that point. I'd lived with you long enough to see like, man, this is a very committed person. So when you took this on, compared to everyone else I know that's in podcasting, and that's quite a lot. There's only one other person that's reached 200 episodes. So I didn't imagine at the time, based on my frame of reference for what, you know, how many episodes someone should have done or get to, or how ideas evolve. And I am equally super proud and happy and impressed that Portfolio Career Podcast is where it's at now.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. And so we talked about how I've been consistent with this, but have been changing and you know, evolving through other things. Giovanni, how do you think about, as somebody who's, you know, calculated and sometimes we joke around, you know, having no gaps into you know, information and insights and systems and things like that. How do you think about kind of designing, how are you thinking about designing 2022 in kind of comparison to some of the years before and how you think about kind of stuff that you want to do?
I'll start off with saying that every year I go through an exercise to pick three words to guide me through the year. And so those words act as my own compass. You can think of each word being your north, your west, your east. And I guess there's no south, but either word could be interchangeable with that. And my three words this year are offense, recovery, and build. And so this year, the big theme is to take initiative to go out into the world. And I think one of the big things that I started with was actually leaving my job. So I recently left Google and I've been there for 3 years, and it was definitely walking away from a lot of money. It was great people, but for me, it wasn't really aligned with my purpose and what I wanted to do in the long-term future. And I think for a lot of people, that's been a big wake-up call, especially with the lockdown. A number of people have had a little bit more time inside and indoors to think, sit with their thoughts and figure out what they want to do with their lives. So I think for me, the biggest change was that lockdown has made me significantly more extroverted than I historically am. So I find myself not being as socially exhausted being around people. I think the deficit was just so large during lockdown that I now crave a lot of social interaction. I am much more drawn to getting back into the arts. So writing poetry, drawing, doing more creative writing and long form writing. At the same time, I do love to build and I love engineering. So I'll definitely be exploring open source projects and some other projects that can help experiment with more either passive income or more residual income outside of salary.
Kane, what would you say are your three words for the year?
I'm changing this year, and over the last year, I've spent a lot of time thinking about how I'm going to approach, reframing the last 5 years in transitioning to new opportunities. So as you both know, and I've talked to quite a few friends and people I trust in professionally and personally, the last year or two has been a lot of change and a lot of transition for me in terms of my work and thinking about my skill set. And I'm still in transition, but I found previously that I had chosen three words and then quantitatively wasn't committing to it as much or goal setting around the three words as much as I'd wanted to. Like, they were present as a reminder in thought, I guess, or in passing, but I'm really trying to focus on how I felt. I think part of my yearly assessments and my goal setting now is around just what gives me energy. And as I transition and figure out what to do professionally next after exiting and selling my property management business, it's really trying to figure out just where things feel right or give me kind of compounding positive energy and make me feel kind of in my zone or in a flow state, and then orienting my three words around that. So I'm being a lot more selective this year in thinking about it. My birthday just passed too, and I often find that my birthday is more of the marker for me as opposed to January 1st. So I tend to, with the holiday craziness and intensity around the holidays with family and social engagements, this week has actually been more of a busy week. So the three words are coming, but I'm not there yet. I liked yours this year as well, Giovanni. I think offense was a good one.
What do you think? Is there something you want to be a little bit more offensive on? Like, how did offense, why did it resonate with you?
I threw out defense often in the last year as a mental space I felt I was in. So in kind of the messy exit due to the pandemic with my property management business, it felt like very defensive thinking. So offense resonated with me as a mental space I'm aspiring to be in more and deconstructing what that means for me. So I think it definitely felt right. So in line with what I said about kind of what feels good and feels right and gets my creative energy flowing and thinking really fired up, hearing offense as a word, I wanted to copy it. But I don't like to copy. I like being an original. So I'm figuring out my word that can mean offense for me.
Giovanni, do you think offense is, it was interesting to hear you talk about offense in context with also, like, you know, leaving Google, leaving your job. Do you think that's a function of kind of the environment, or is also a function of kind of skill set and skill stack, so to speak? Or, like, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is that I realized that incentives can really shape you in terms of most of your behavior and decisions. And at least within the last year and a half, it's been a very favorable financial year for a lot of people in the tech sector and the finance sector. So you have this huge windfall of money, but the nature of your work is not changing that much. And so you're kind of disconnected from the feedback loops compared to people that are, like, working their butt off, working 10 hours a day, doing hard labor, doing other things that are very critical to society, especially a lot of essential workers who ironically often are more low income and not paid for the value that they actually do provide to society. And I think for me, I found myself getting very complacent and losing my hunger and my energy. That usually is what drives me forward and makes me happy. And then I used to be a gamer growing up. So I'm very big into the idea of, like, if you want to get good, you're going to have to play a hard mode. And I feel like I was kind of playing life on easy mode. And I was really going through this cycle of depression of just not feeling fulfilled and making all this money, spending a good chunk of it to try to fill the void. And I realized, okay, I could actually save a lot of money if I just remove myself from the situation that I'm not as happy as in. Even though I cut off the income, I think the spending is also going to drop a lot if I have the freedom and flexibility to do what I want. And I definitely understand that I'm in a privileged position to be able to do that. I think the bigger meta pattern here is that the world is consistently changing and things are going to get a lot more difficult. And you kind of have to meet life's difficulty by learning how to gain experience by playing on hard mode and really aligning the incentives to shape you into the person that you want to become, to be surrounded by the people that you want to be around, and to be doing the things that you want to be doing that bring you joy.
Hard mode. That's fascinating. I mean, I think I've sometimes when I, throughout the podcasting journey, people have been like, why don't you outsource, or why don't you, you know, change it up, or why don't you get sponsors, or why don't you try to do these other things? And I don't know, maybe for me, the hard mode has been just continuing to go and do it all myself. You guys know that that's probably cost some of the social life, some of those areas in my portfolio, because of, you know, staying into this game for so long. But Keen, what do you think about hard mode for you? Or do you think about that kind of concept, or,
absolutely.
Or another? Yeah,
definitely. A piece of advice from a friend recently, when I was talking with him about some of the challenges I faced from the stress and turbulence with exiting my company that I wasn't used to. I wasn't calibrated, I think, for that amount of stress. I wasn't prioritizing the tools to deal with that amount of stress. And as Giovanni stated, I think income was never as much of a concern for me. I've had the benefit of having a strong mind surrounding finances and budgeting and things of that nature. I'm very detail oriented in that area. And I was on easy mode in terms of, I think, spiritual and personal / professional challenges. I wasn't spending as much time goal setting, I think, personally surrounding that. And I was letting a lot of opportunities land in my lap, but I wasn't steering my own ship in that regard. And I think the advice I was given, and it was only regarding my sleep. I was just talking to this friend about sleep and, you know, the focus and intensity with which I've directed my attention on solving my sleep issues from that turbulent period, or that have manifested from that period. The advice he gave me essentially was stacking itself, like just not focusing on just one thing and trying to solve one thing at a time. The stacking and trying to just show up for many things is itself a skill. So that's its own adversity and its own hard mode, is making sure that you're flexing that muscle of not getting too pigeonholed into solving one problem at a time, but being able to juggle one problem, two problems, three problems, and making sure you're focusing on that too. So I'd spent too much time, I think it was a month, just feeling dejected and almost obsessive about solving my sleep issues, that it was creating more problems surrounding my sleep issues when I sat and really thought about it. And that advice resonated a lot. It was just, don't focus so much on the problem and take a step back equally from such a foundational core problem like that, such a personal one. And it's advice that's common to other domains or other types of problems professionally, yet I realized I was ignoring it personally, and I needed to show up and feel some pride and feel some progress in hard mode, or in, we'll say, loot grinding, my version of that, grinding against harder enemies.
It sounds like it's kind of like the system type of approach. And I think, Giovanni, you've talked about that a bunch, and I'd love to hear more about, you know, it may not be goals or it may not be ambitions, but more kind of thinking about the overall kind of system type of approach if you want to make change. Or can you kind of riff a little bit on the importance of systems and how you think about applying them into your life?
Yeah, sure. So I'll give some background context in that. Oftentimes in the personal development self-help area, the big focus is on what's your goals? What do you want to accomplish? And I like to think about goals as the title of the story. So goals are very important to know the context and what the target is, but you actually need to write the essay. You really need to write the story, and it needs to have like a rhythm and flow and structure to it. And so that's your system. That's the process that allows you to accomplish the goal. And when you have a goal, the other downside towards it is that you're kind of in a default failure state until you accomplish the goal, because that's how you measure whether it's like done or not done. And that can cause some psychological or emotional friction in terms of the stress. If you set a goal that's way too high and you don't have enough resources or energy or time to do that goal. But when you reframe it into thinking about, okay, what are the micro steps? What's like the smallest thing that I could do? What is the win that I can take for the day? That if I do this one thing, then I've accomplished something. And then when you do that little thing over time, the benefits will start to compound, and it's inevitable for you to hit your goal. And so I find that a much more healthier way. And you could think about systems as any sort of process or series of steps to build up towards a habit or build up towards an identity. And I like to think about it in a much more holistic view. So I think about a system as, it can be your mission statement, it could be a purpose, it can be an identity, and then it can also be the habits, or it can be some tactics. So all of these work together to accomplish the goal. And usually system thinkers tend to be a little bit more abstract thinkers, because you're thinking about hypothetical situations in your head. You're thinking about inputs and outputs. You're thinking about flows of things, but it's not all cerebral. Life is full of systems. Systems define and guide a lot of incentives and everything in our life. So thinking about things in terms of cultivating systems is not making your life more rigid or removing the fun out of things. In fact, I found putting systems into my life allows me to do many more things and allows me to have much more free time to be spontaneous, because systems allow you to set up the guardrails that focus your effort so that you're not wasting effort, you're not wasting time, so that you can do way more things in your day. Whereas if you don't have the systems in place, you'll find you'll have trouble being consistent with doing your particular habit or task. So systems I found to be like instrumental to consistency and also performing at a high level, and also being able to lean into your passions or gifts on a deeper level.
Ian, I see you nodding your head a bunch. taking that in, or you got something to riff on top of that?
I'm definitely absorbing some of it. Cerebral is a great word in light of that. This last year, I think the stacking of certain systems I had developed habits around, and the systems I was maybe consciously attributing energy towards, the source of why and where those systems were derived from professionally and personally for me changed so much. And it was good for me. I'm thinking largely around a new field and kind of domain of designing systems around that I'm not used to is, as I mentioned before, kind of what feels right. I never spend a lot of time orienting my systems and my decision-making. And I've started to realize that I rely on systems a lot, and trusting certain systems I've set up for myself, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, relieve me of a lot of the burden of decision-making, which felt intense this last year and the last 2 years, and reflecting on kind of the source and engineering my system surrounding the source of how I feel about certain things is at least the feedback I've gotten so far, and the reading and kind of research into what I think some people might call a more spiritual domain, or understanding that better, kind of aligning the mind-body connection relative to professional goals or professional decision-making and personal too, has been my focus. So it's, I think what hit hard there, at least for me, and what I'm hearing for myself personally, is just being able to make sure I'm developing and putting stronger systems into my life that are geared towards causes, missions, a vision statement, and identity that feels right to me, and that the story I'm telling, the title and the story, to stick with this analogy, feels good and keeps, you know, keeps me in that flow state of continuing to write, but that I can trust it and I'm not, you know, stuck in analysis paralysis and a lot of indecision, and that those systems relieve that burden is important to me. That's definitely a focus for me. And then I think systems thinking and kind of merging those two ideas can give you.
Giovanni, on about systems, is there certain books that you'd recommend? And I'm sure we'll talk about some books later on as well. And while you're thinking about that, though, I also do want to talk about the system of annual reflection and that process. So if we talk about kind of systems and books and then annual reflection, which thanks again for hosting workshops and conversations related to annual reflection. Recently, I think this year I was able to do kind of the most amount of annual reflection that I've done in the past. Like I think I slowly started to like figure out how to do it. And I think this year was the best because of the resources and that you shared. And I was able to kind of like work my way up from it. I think like in the beginning, like prior years, it's like, oh no, it's a good idea. It's a good idea. And like, you kind of, some of these things that you're like, know that are good ideas, they like, you like try them for a little while, then you're like, okay, I'll do it again later. And then that kind of builds up. And then this year I felt like, oh, okay, I want to dive deeper into this. So anyways, systems, books, annual reflection, Giovanni, let's hear it.
Yeah. So there is definitely a canonical book titled System Thinking. And that book, I blank on the author immediately. Last name is Meadows. And she wrote a really approachable sort of encyclopedia tour on systems thinking. How do you learn to think in a more systematic way? And how do you learn to see systems in the world? And much of that knowledge that she teaches you, you can apply to your life in shaping your habits. Speaking of habits, the next book I would recommend is Atomic Habits by James Clear. That book does a very good job at breaking down the emotional barriers to developing habits and gives you very approachable tactics to start creating space and both time and mental space to introducing new habits, and also tactics on how to reduce bad habits. So that's another good book. As for a third, I would recommend a book by the author. Let me see if I can remember it. Yes. So the book by Scott Adams, and that one is How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big. So that book was also one of my earlier exposures to framing things as moving beyond goals back into a system thinking mindset. So Scott Adams does a really good job using his own life as an example to show how he made that transition from goals-oriented thinking to system thinking, as well as how do you go about blending multiple skills to get ahead in life. So it's very hard to be someone who's like a top 1% in one skill. There's a lot of genetic requirements and some other requirements. But if you're pretty decent at, if you're like top 20 or top 10%, in two separate skills, you can be like top one and top or top 5% if you merge those skills together. So that was a very interesting mindset around skill stacking to find new opportunities. When it comes to doing annual reviews and reflections, that's been a great progress that I've been cultivating for almost 8 or 9 years now. And I originally was inspired to do that through Nathan Barry. And he's another entrepreneur. And that ritual has been the most important writing exercise I do. Originally, it started out with a simple framework what went well, what didn't go well, what am I working towards? Eventually, I evolved some bigger questions in terms of what am I removing or reducing from my life? What did I learn to highlight some of those learnings? And also to focusing on particular pillars in my life, like family, finances, and some other areas. And that practice, I've been, of course, evangelizing to any and all of my friends, because I think it's changed my life and I think it can change their life. But beyond that, what's helped me, especially after I experienced depression, has been to just have more compassion for myself and empathy for my past and future self. I can go back in time and see other challenges and hardships that I went through, some things that I used to worry about that I was like, really, did I worry about that thing? But at the same time, in that moment, I thought this one small problem was my whole world. And you just learn over time that this too shall pass, and you just get over it. And at the same time, it allows me to compound learnings from each year so that I don't go back and make the same mistake over and over again. It's also been a great activity to help me build vulnerability, because I publish my annual reviews for other people to read. And as another byproduct, that's been able to attract a lot of opportunities my way, new friends through shared life situations and circumstances. And you also don't know what challenge that you would have solved or went through that somebody else has gone through. So is this kind of open sourcing your life learnings and experience so that other people can go through their own challenges too as well?
Yeah. One thing that I think, another reason why I think this year was better for me with the annual reflection was like thinking about going back to systems. It was like, how can I utilize this activity into podcasting, or how, you know, how else can I tie it into my system? So for me, I shared like 20 reflections from 2021. And so it was like, cool. I love this idea of like reflecting and, but the way that it's going to get me to take action is like, how do I incorporate it into my system? And so the system, you know, been a weekly podcast. And so then I was like, okay, how do I do that? And I think that was what really got me to kind of dive deeper and then take action on it. So yeah, I think that that's been a kind of a meta learning for me too, is like, you know, and Giovanni, you talked about in the beginning around incentives, right? It's like more and more, I try to think about like, okay, am I going to read this? If I'm going to read this book, how do I tie it into other things? And the podcast has been foundational on that front. Kian, and the other thing that we did this year, and I don't know, maybe we'll do it on this episode. The other thing that we did during the annual reflection this year was hot seats. That was a really fun exercise. I don't know if we'll be able to do it on this episode, but I thought the way that you tied it into a really interactive process where people can challenge each other stuff definitely was really, really helpful too. Kian, what do you think about, or what books have really stood out to you, Kian? I don't know if I've ever asked you this question. With Giovanni, with reading over 450 books and, you know, shared a lot of notes on the books that really stand out to him, what's a book that's kind of changed your life or that really jumps out to you, Kian?
I'm definitely not as prolific in my reading habits as Giovanni is, but Atomic Habits was a recent read this year that I can 100% co-sign on its simplicity and I think effectiveness and directness in learning to develop stronger habits and again, trusting systems, I think. And Atomic Habits, The Power of Habit. I'm blanking on the author right now, but that was a read 2 or 3 years ago that I also felt had a strong message and gave me some great inspiration and integration of its advice. But yeah, I think from a writing standpoint, writing has been a focus of mine. I'm involved in Ship 30 for 30 currently, and am trying to incorporate writing into a practice that can better inform my own internal storytelling and internal mission statement. And that's evolved over the last 10 years for sure. And I think to give it a bit more of a practical example in terms of what it was like 10 years ago versus the process I'm in now is 10 years ago, I think my annual review process would center around me digging through and trying to piece together chronologically what happened during a year. And it was pretty scattershot, just a no system or method behind recording events. It was, you know, Hopefully I uploaded and had the inspiration in the moment to upload photos that I took, or friends that were very good at that or active about that would tag me in certain things, so it would be sourceable later. And I would piece together what was going on, and I think derive goals or think about what happened and what should be happening in the next year based on that. And I never really sat and thought, I think, about how outside of even those pictures or writing that I was doing to record the events of, you know, that year or in that particular moment, how I felt and capturing really how I felt and then how I felt at the current time. I was never connecting that 10 years ago. It was always kind of creating quantitative goals based on I did X amount of this past year, and now let's push for this because of random Y reason. And I'm trying to be a lot more intentional now in the story, the internal storytelling that I think happens with each of us every day. And especially, at least for me, I've had to unpeel and understand better that a lot of negative self-talk, I think, has informed and inspired or made me competitive and given me a lot of drive sometimes and emotions that benefited me occasionally, but equally held me back. And I wasn't as aware of that until the last year or two, that my language and my reflection of an annual review would often be oriented in that direction. And it's changed now. I think a tool I use that I was introduced to about 5 years ago by Jordan Peterson, a controversial figure for maybe his content, but there's no denying he's an effective orator. And before he wrote his first book, or at least his first very popular book, 12 Steps for Life, I was introduced, when I stumbled across him, to his self-authoring program, which introduced me to narrative therapy. And I'd strongly recommend it. Maybe not if you know, if you're particularly charged or offended by Jordan Peterson, whatever the case may be. There are other narrative therapies out there, but I think that connection between writing and reflecting and developing better systems around how you're capturing your moments and goals throughout the year and incorporating that writing will better inform and more strongly inform your storytelling in the long run. And I think I had some challenges with that 5 to 10 years ago compared to what I do now. And that's kind of my journey now, is to piece together and create periods and arcs to my life that tell a story that feels very confident now to move forward with and inform my community, inform my professional network, and bring the right opportunities again that feel good relative to that. So that writing you do, at least in the self-authoring or narrative therapy, is giving you definitive labeling that allows you to create those arcs. So it was very effective. And I didn't attend the annual review workshops. I'm looking forward to, in the next 2 weeks, diving more into my process as I've started it this past week. But it's going to involve a lot of writing. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yvonne, I see you smiling at that. This idea of like kind of sharing your story and sharing what you're up to attract opportunities. You talked about it a little bit with the annual reflection and annual review writing, Yvonne. I think that you're really good at telling stories and communicating kind of ideas Twitter threads, et cetera. How do you kind of think about it? Do you have like a framework or an approach to storytelling when you're writing on Twitter or elsewhere? Or how does it come across with such, how does it come across?
Yeah, I think for me, a big realization was realizing how integral storytelling is to human nature. It is, of course, a skill, but our ability to receive stories is universal. It is one of the mechanisms that have allowed humanity to flourish and pass on knowledge. So there is this kind of universal receptiveness to storytelling. And with that, there is a certain resonance of story structure. Story structure is just the way it is, because that's how it lines up with our own psychology. And so you don't want to deviate too far from this kind of standard story structure format. You can switch up certain things on a genre level, but usually you'll find like some pattern. There is kind of like our origin storytelling pattern, and there are some derivatives that do line up with the base storytelling arc. And for me, I realized that as a highly sensitive individual, there are some advantages that you can have with being able to sense and feel emotions on a deep level. You can become an emotional orchestrator and conductor. And even when I've had my music listening sessions with Kian, for example, in the past, a lot of like the best albums are like a story. And there is a standard kind of concept album that is more structured in that format. But overall, most albums have a sort of emotional cadence to it. Certain songs sound like an opening song. Certain sound like a closing song. And even when it comes to like the beats per minute or tempo, all of that has some effect on the body in what it can resonate with. Your heart rate will start to rise, or calming music, it'll start to calm you down. Or even certain instruments like percussions versus piano versus acoustic, everything has an emotional resonance. And so words can also have emotional impact. Varying word lengths, like short word lengths, can speed up the process. Long word lengths can like lengthen out the process. And how you structure a short sentence versus long sentence, where you cut a paragraph, everything can be used to speed up time, slow down time, and trigger certain emotional pulses. Usually the medium that you're writing on also has certain biases in the way that it operates. Twitter, starting out with a limited character limit, of course, was the constraint. And of course, all constraints create some variation of art form. And so for Twitter, that constraint was an art form in itself, that you can figure out how to compact a certain amount of words in that limited character set. And of course, with threads, that opens up a lot more creativity and flexibility. But of course, every additional tweet in a thread is like an additional chord that you're playing on a guitar or something. And so after a while, you can form the first tweet with some sort of emotional hook to feel leave people curious or angry or kind of shocked or in a more humorous state. And you can lead them into the thread and you can take them along a journey with that thread. But in general, when you're telling a story, you're actively trying to world build. You can create like a micro world, or you can create a bigger world, or you can create a bridge to a pre-existing world that somebody has in their head about some idea. And so realizing who your audience is and what sort of words or what sort of cliches or what sort of phrases or images resonate with them allows you to better connect with what constraints you put around yourself and how you tell your story, the length of the story, the platform and medium that you use, et cetera. There are a lot of different books and resources on this. I used to watch a lot of TED Talks to do public speaking learning. I watch a lot of Pixar videos to learn kind of the art of emotional conducting. There's all sorts of art forms where you can dissect from the greatest producers, greatest directors, et cetera, to figure out how they use their medium to tell story. And I've just been trying to pick almost like a eat your own buffet, eat all you can buffet, all the various mediums to see what can I remix into the art forms that I'm trying to communicate a story through.
Damn. That was
so legendary. Even that itself was a story that I tried to phrase.
Kian, with when you were doing stand-up comedy, how do you think about that type of stuff, that medium and that storytelling? What were some of your like top learnings from, you know, learning how to do stand-up comedy and then actually doing it? What were the big takeaways there for you?
Professionally, or at least as a craft, stand-up comedy, I discovered, was an excellent benchmark in the brevity of storytelling. And if you have a 5-minute set, I think there's like a lot of rules due to the rawness. And by rawness, I mean direct, usually visceral feedback. And I think Twitter allows some of that. So the evolution of certain platforms to give you direct feedback and be able to iterate and be able to adapt and be able to reflect and go through what used to be a longer process based on the medium or the product you were distributing your story through or vehicle. Stand-up, I quickly learned, especially early on, is brutal in that sense and a meat grinder of sorts when it comes to storytelling. And I won't even purport that I was great at it or good at it. I have a background in performance. So I would angle a lot of my style and a lot of my content and thinking through how can I perform this best. But I think there was a lot of growing and a lot of learning I had to do when it came to the systems surrounding my writing and the structure and goal of that writing and developing a process surrounding that. It was one of the hardest challenges I've had. I still consider it a very difficult skill to develop personally. And the pandemic obviously shut down as much opportunity to get that visceral feedback of the stage in a captive audience. But I often use the ability to tell a story in one joke with just a setup and a punchline as the ultimate form of conveying an idea. So there's a lot when it comes to at least performance. There's attitude, there's character, there's a lot of things that have to resonate with your audience. And if you can do that in one line, relatively, it's a very, very strong tool to use when you want to extrapolate from that one line and write more or add more to it. And for Twitter writing as well, in the cohort I'm in for Ship 30 for 30, it's often that brevity is equally the goal. So as Giovanni stated, some of the masters like Pixar, that's a great example. I watched their shorts on Disney Plus. If you guys have Disney Plus or you're using it, going through the Pixar shorts that maybe you weren't exposed to when you go to the theaters or that aren't available on YouTube, they have so many excellent shorts that tell such compelling stories in such a quick amount of time. And you see very quickly too who they're targeting and the cultures and the flavors and the language of who they're introducing. And it's a machine in that sense. You can see the machine at work, and there's a lot to learn from there. Even I think one good tactic I can give, if your listeners are interested and viewers, in a great tool I used when in my own inspiration for content and that structure for comedic writing, but I think all writing can benefit from this, is looking at a transcript or transcripting some of your favorite video content. If you're not as voracious of a reader like Giovanni is, take your video content and transcribe it and look at the written words. So if it's a Pixar short, it was written by somebody before it was animated and sucking you in with its great visuals and its captivating editing and script equally. But unless you look at the script and see what that writing's like and then begin to draft your own version of that for the content you want, it's very inspirational to do that for some of your favorite video content.
Love that. That's a great idea. And I thought that was interesting. You were talking about how hard it is and what a craft it is to be a comedian. And I think there's like a joke that says like comedians are the original thought leaders, or like the initial thought leaders of like, you know, how do you communicate ideas that get people to take action or to feel an emotion or to think differently? So switching gears a little bit, I want to talk about last topic probably is skills. I'm curious, as we're entering in the new year, is there any new skills that you guys are thinking about learning? And maybe we'll start with you, Giovanni.
So as a native New Yorker, I hope to get my driver's license. I think a New York man has to quit his job so he has enough time to get his driver's license. So so hopefully I can work on getting that. But I would love to learn more digital painting and drawing. I would love to be able to use, I've been cultivating the skill of storytelling through words, but I would love to do more storytelling through visuals. And so I would love to learn how to use Procreate a little bit more, do some drawings to describe complex topics. And another skill I would love to learn, a new programming language I would love to learn. Would love to actually learn more math, a more advanced math. That's something that I was historically very bad at, but I think I just took the wrong approach and actually do have a very abstract and visual mind. And now that I actually know how to code, I can use that. I can learn math through the lens of a programmer, which I think will make it a little bit more accessible to me.
Kian, any skills you're focused on?
Writing, as I mentioned before, I think the goal of and systems surrounding just writing consistently and writing being a go-to for thoughts and ideas, as opposed to rapid fire, shorthand note taking. If I could be able to turn that into, let's say, jokes or a storytelling type format, is very powerful to me. And I think will bleed into all my other creative outlets that I've explored throughout my life. So that's a primary focus right now, is just to gain more confidence surrounding storytelling within writing and then using that writing or leveraging it in other creative outlets or publishing it. And I was strong with languages growing up. I've always had an ear for music and an ear for sounds. And I've always, when I was producing music and involved in music, sampling, I love to dig for sounds and interesting sounds. And I understand the structure of sound and EQing and mixing and when doing a mix. And so languages for me were always kind of a strong suit. And I want to improve and introduce speaking a second or third language in my life again. I grew up speaking German and English, but my German's weak. It's become weak. I haven't used it or flexed it in a long time. And a last one, I've joined my friend Todd's Ill Skills Accelerator. So I've supported him in that. He's grown it over 2 years tremendously. And he's been seeing a lot of success with it. He's an excellent street style dancer and an OG, what we call them in the streets. But in that space and in that culture, there's still a strong structure of a master and a student. And I kind of miss that, like that kind of mentor mentee, but master and student dynamic. And the skill I kind of want to learn from that is just how to choose my masters again in different formats and in different domains and really prioritize going for the best. So he's my example for that in dancing and a lot of physical goals I have and kind of health goals when it comes to movement art and just improving my body. But yeah, I've selected him for that dynamic as well.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's really the idea of kind of who are the people that you're following? Like, where are you getting inspiration from? Who do you want to learn from? I think that that is a incredibly important thing. And you could be, you know, following people for the wrong reasons or later change that and be like, what was I doing? But these days there's no shortage of people that are producing great content and stuff like that. So you can quickly change. We talked about cohort-based courses as a place to learn from people and with people. So those are great ways. Anything else that you guys think that we missed here? I know there's, you know, years of living together in conversations, but in the context of this pod episode 200, is there a micro action or anything that you think listeners should go do? Anything you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I think I find a lot of beauty and power and commitment in doing the thing that you wouldn't mind doing all the time. So I would kind of bring a prompt to the reader, like, what is something that you wouldn't mind doing 200 iterations of? Like, look for that thing and go do that.
And in your case, that's books because you read over 450.
Yeah, I'm across 500 mark at this point. I would actually say that would be in the writing category. I would love to publish 200 articles and or essays.
Kim?
To answer Giovanni's prompt, it would be dancing. Dancing is absolutely my, it serves a lot of purposes for me. It gives me energy. It's my meditation sometimes. It is a source of creativity outside of probably the positive chemicals that get released doing it, but it creates a lot of ideas, gets me out of my head, gets me into my body and out of body sometimes too. But that's my answer to that prompt. I would love to see when you publish this, if people comment and submit their own prompts, that's a great question. It was a suggestion, right? Or just kind of additional notes. I like the conversation we were having right before the call, to be honest, just about like, I like the thinking of and where I'm at now in my life, whereas in my early 20s or even mid 20s, it was like, I wasn't even thinking about how do I do an assessment of, you know, my mortal body. So it's like the full assessment, just even that thinking of like, I want to get scanned by the best tools available, know where I'm at, create my benchmarks, and then kind of realistically see where I'm going to take, you know, where I'm at and develop those goals, but equally dream. It's like, it's very informative. And I'm wondering like, how can you do that in other domains? So it's, I think, what was the full body scan called that you did, Giovanni, recently? The DEXIS?
Yeah, it was called a DEXIS scan.
A DEXIS scan. Yeah. I'm going to be pursuing that.
It does like a full body. It's an X-ray that does, it does your bone structure composition. So it understands your bone density, understands what's your muscle mass, how much fat do you have, so it can calculate your BMI on a very scientific basis. It also scans all your body proportions. So they'll give you circumference of of what's the size of your left arm versus your right arm, or your left leg versus your right leg. And for me, it's just an integral investment. So almost like you should invest in this before you invest in stocks. Because if a stock crashes, goes 80%, you'll recover. Your body crashes, goes 80%. Good luck. So I think prioritizing health as your number one investment, I think, should be the way to go. So I've been in a similar journey to you, just looking for the best practitioners and tools available to learn about my body and my health. And especially after the pandemic and lockdown, health has come to a forefront for a lot of people.
Totally. I think it's interesting how we hit a point or a wall or whatever it may be, just the inspiration to do that bodily. But it does make me think, a lot of people pursue coaches, or they pursue just a person to help them assess professionally where they are. And I'll leave that as my prompt to your listeners and your audience, David, is, what are you doing, or where are you in regards to that assessment and seeking the expert master level bird's eye view, you know, where you are and where you want to be with your goals. And, I'm going to start thinking more about that. That's good inspiration. I like the body talk because I'm currently in it, and I didn't think about, how can I apply that to writing? I'm kind of doing it with dance, but it is very effective. And I think it creates inspiration. It creates perspective. It creates confidence and informs you.
Love it, guys. Well, Kian, Giovanni, thank you so much. From interview number one, interview number episode 100, to now episode 200, boys, I can't say thanks, or men, I can't say thanks enough. Kian, Giovanni, you guys.
Oh, we're boys.
we're boys to men out here.
Exactly, boys to men.
Sounds good, guys. And Giovanni, have people follow you if they don't already follow you on Twitter. Kian, have people follow you on Instagram. Any other places you want to point
people? Instagram or Twitter, at Giovanni, that's JUVONI.
I am at Because I Kian on Instagram and at Kian Keeks on Twitter.
Love it. Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.